October 11th, 2016.
So we're not going to wait for Christian to start?
He hasn't notified them, and he'll be returning.
Yeah, all right. Good afternoon, everybody. Matt, let's see here. Testing. Can you hear me okay? Microphone's a little low.
I'll turn it up.
Testing, testing.
Good.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Pleasant Grove Subcommittee. Let's start with, I want to start by wishing everyone a happy Yom Kippur, healthy and happy New Year. Maybe I had to feed that. Thank you, B. Let's start with introductions. This is Brian Miller, your chair of this Pleasant Grove Subcommittee, and we'll go around to my left, I guess, to Phil.
Phil Pleasure, Arlington, Virginia.
Thanks so much, Sylvan Merrill.
Hard corporate silver screen and access for all from the Council of Governments.
Mary Kay McMahon, Washington, D.C.
Mary Kay on Silver Spring Mayor.
Christopher Colbert, Metropolitan Eligibility.
It's Matt McDay, Fairfax County.
My name is Randy Pope from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Is that everyone?
Yes.
All right, very good. See, the mic's a little hot. I think this one would be really a little hot. That would be. Sorry. I just don't want to frighten anybody with unexpected feedback. Let's move to the acceptance of the agenda as submitted. Can I get a motion to accept the agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you so much. We have a motion to accept the agenda as submitted. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now the minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes as submitted? Second? No second?
Second.
Oh, there we are. Thank you so much. Now discussion. I have two very small corrections to make to last month's meeting minutes, in September. One is that the minutes currently show that the chair, myself, started the meeting. In fact, I was a bit late, and Dr. Posner was kind enough to get us underway for that meeting. So I don't know how important it is to everybody, but as a historian, sort of feel obligated to mention that. So that's one correction. And I think it shows that we ended at 4:55, which would be pretty awesome if that were true. But it's not. I'm pretty sure we were closer to 6. So I don't know if any objection to that, but to submit those corrections to the minutes from last month. Any other additions, corrections, objections, suggestions?
Mr. Chair, this is B.
Yes, Dr.
So you're saying we ended at 7 o'clock?
No, I think it
shows
5:55.
I think it shows 4:55.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 5:55.
Yeah. 9:05, 9:05, or 6, or 7:06.
Yes, okay.
And you say Chair Miller called the meeting to order at 4:20.
It was about 4:20? Yeah, that sounds about right. Y'all got gotten well underway. Again, thanks to Phil for doing that. Anything else? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of the approving the minutes as amended, signify by saying aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Motion carries. Thanks, everybody. I think next we have public comment.
Yes, sir. We have two people for public comment. The first one is going to be Robert Walsh. Hold on a moment.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I have a concern. I'm not sure I'll be even close to midnight. They got a baseball playing after up in COVID. Had no service after midnight.
Did everyone
do
that?
No. Oh, yeah, we're having a problem with the service, Metro Rail. it closes at midnight, and we got baseball games lasting until 11:30, 12 midnight.
Thank you. As a committee, the full committee and the Busterville, we're definitely very keenly aware of this issue and attracting it, and are getting ready to make our concerns known through public hearings and elsewhere, because there are impacts, not just on Busterville, of course, but ripple effects on the entire system. Maybe at this point, our best hope is that the Nationals get in the World Series, right? That would force some changes, perhaps.
They have been a bullpen.
That's a good point. thank you very much for the comments. We appreciate that. Dr. B.
Yes, we have our next person, Heidi Kicks.
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. It's been a while since I've been to Bus Rail. So I've stored up a few topics, but I noticed you have 30 minutes. Not that I'll take it. Quickly, you know, on my way here, just to share some of the issues and frustrations that people face, on my way here to the AAC last week, I was trapped on a train. And it was I know the exact number, 3109. And it was because only one of the two doors would open. And just so happened that I had gotten on the green light at Lanham Plaza. So it was the right side doors I entered on, but every other stop you must get in and out on the left side. And it is the left side door that would only one of them would slide open. Didn't realize that I couldn't pass through with that restriction. What did do the intercom, you know, they're like, but how could you have gotten on there? I said, well, there's Lane Font. So, of course, I rode longer, but she did stop two stops later after using the intercom. And the driver of the train came all the way down to about the fifth car and had to use a special key above the door frame, open something up, and manually open the door. So, you know, just an example of some of the issues that people do face in using the system. But the response was perfect. I mean, she was very helpful, but it just took a minute to communicate and get to the intercom in time. So I did have to come back and around, just kind of FYI.
I just wanted to know you have more, just real quick. Did you call that in? By chance,
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I've never seen that before. That's really interesting. Just one door, the two
slid open.
I've never seen that.
And she tried to push it. Other people tried that, but it, whatever it was something else.
Thank you.
Secondly, I just wanted to mention that, you know, we went through all this about what an accessible bus stop is. You know, the 5 by 8 feet. And the addition that Metro did of a corresponding corner with curb cuts so that there was somewhere to actually go. But one of the things is the bus stops where they put the shelter and the bench often do not meet that 8 foot back. I often have to get on either before or after. But if they stop right in front of that, and they throw the thing down, I can't back up far enough to get on. So, it seems so silly that that's the new thing, and yet they are creating actually more inaccessible bus stops.
Thank you. Did you have something else?
Are you saying that the bus stop the
exactly. There's not 8 feet back from the curb.
From curb to the back of the bus stop into the corner.
Exactly. If they're going to put them in, they just need to be further back. And then one of the newest bus stops on South Dakota Avenue, right in front of the McDonald's, I will claim to frequent. if you leave Fort Totten onto a advocacy meeting I go to one Saturday a month, they put in this new bus stop, and it's completely inaccessible. So they put in the trash can. So if they, this bus driver dropped the things and I could get into the bus stop, but to get out of the, past the shelter, one side was a permanently in the cement trash can and in the other was the bus sign. So literally, I had to get back on the bus. So that, again, that bus stop is completely inaccessible to a wheelchair. And that's on...
Thanks for finding that, Heidi.
Sure.
We have a form on our website on the vendor accessibility resources for inaccessible bus stops or the type of reports that you say. If that is sent in, that comes into our office, either Chris or I or Carol would see that.
Okay.
And then we would send somebody out to check that bus stop. We can have bus planning remove obstacles like that when we hear about them. And if the bus stop is not, if the bench is impeding on the space as you described, you know, we can, I don't know if affirmative is that we can actually fix it, but we can at least figure out why this is happening. But we need the bus stop, and we need the bus stop number or a specific location, and that's why we have that form on our website and under accessibility resources for that purpose.
Thank you. And one other issue just about bus stops, you put in the benches and the shelter and right at the place where right in front of my apartments at 7th and P, what they become, understandably, is shelter where homeless people sometimes take residence in those shelters for obvious reasons, and not that I want to, you know, I can't understand that, but it begins, I think, to look at, are we doing, is that really increasing accessibility by creating that situation?
Can I respond to that, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, please. We're going to see a question about it.
Good, thank you. I'm sorry I'm late. A couple of things. One, let me just clarify, I agree with everything David said. But when you tell us what the bus stop is, just as you know, the vast majority, the overwhelming majority, probably 90% of bus stops in the region are not on Metro's property. So we can work with bus planning.
It's a Metro stop.
No.
But the shelter.
Excuse me. Well, you're saying the bus shelter?
It's the shelter and the bench.
The shelter and the bench. The shelter and the bench. Generally speaking, unless we're talking about a Metro station, is now on Metro's property. So they're usually the ownership of the jurisdiction. So I'm not disagreeing with Dana. I just want you to know, when you tell us what the bus stop is, like just this one up here, we've been working, they'll sometimes listen to us up here on 7th and H, where they keep putting the trash cans and the news stands where we need the space for accessibility. I just want to be clear that as you all give us bus stops, I don't want you to believe that Metro has the power just to immediately go and change.
Thank you.
I just want to clarify that.
Thank you.
It will work for sure.
Thank you.
And then about the bus shelters, this is something I learned in Baltimore, and I believe we're doing it over here. I see. You're right about bus shelters. Yes, they are homes for some people, unfortunately. So one of the things, and I don't know, and I wish you would let us know when you get a chance to check it out. One of the things we're doing or in the industry, a new design of bus shelters, which becomes an accessibility issue kind of the reverse, you notice these benches are short. They barely can fit two people, maybe three if your young kids kind of squeezing in. The reason why we're doing that, or the reason why the industry has moved to that, is to try to make it less comfortable to sit and to stay there for a long time. And then you'll notice in these new benches, there's like a little handpiece in the middle that kind of divides the seat. While that's for dividing seats, that's really making it very unpleasant for laying down. So you're right. Now, the bus shelter though is becoming And let's take out the homeless. It's also used for drug trafficking in some places. We noticed that in Baltimore. One way on the bus, and 10 at past 5. We know what you're really up to. So if it becomes a nuisance, and again, you can work through our office if you don't want to be the person. I totally get that. You can work through our office if we can relay community concerns about specific bus stops that, while put there for good intention, have actually caused more problems.
This particular one in front of my building, it's a person in a wheelchair. So those specific things, unfortunately, are impacting him. But that's smart thinking.
Yes, thank you.
I know you have a question there, but just real quick, I want to ask Christian. Is there a specific distance, or what if you say it's only those near the metro stops? Is it just the ones that are completely outside of the metro station?
Correct. Okay. And the bus bays outside of the metro stations are generally the only stops totally owned and controlled by Metro, where, remember the 86 does something and we just need to go do it, we can do it. Everything else is basically that of the jurisdiction of D.C., in the case of high speaking, Arlington, Alexandria. And we have great relationships with our bus stop colleagues around the region, but the decisions are about those particular stops are not Metro's only.
Okay, thank you. Larry, do you have a question or comment on this topic?
More comment.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
I know that one thing that has been done before, and recognizing that not all bus stops are governed by the transit agency itself, but various municipalities may have control over those bus stops, at least in moving regional obstacles. So perhaps a solution to dealing with this situation is putting information up that identifies the bus stop, which jurisdiction is actually in charge of maintaining that bus stop for obstacle removal or things like that, so that way customers have the ability to contact the local municipality, let them know what's going on, so that the obstacle can be removed.
Well, we agree, and again, so if you're in Arlington, but you're not at a metro station, and you're at a bus, but you see a bus stop in Arlington, that's Arlington. If you're in Fairfax, if you're in D.C., anywhere, and you're not at a metro station, and it's a bus bay at a metro station, i.e. Tacoma bus bays, those are metro. The bus stop right outside Tacoma Station, that's D.C.
Right. Understood. What I'm saying is, if there were a document out, maybe posted on your website, maybe in hard copy, that had the bus stop name, maybe bus stop number, which jurisdiction is in control of it, and the number to contact that jurisdiction. That way you put all that information in the customer's hand. So other than those bus stops that are governed by you guys, which are usually at bus at subway stations, the bus stations and things like that, the customer would have the ability to go and say, oh, so this bus stop in Shirlington is governed by this person. So here's the phone number. I'll call that number, tell them about my issue so that they can remove the obstacle.
I got you. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is that not on the shelters themselves anywhere? Bus shelters.
I don't know if that's on the shelters. What they've been looking at, and I must say, unfortunately, we allowed Boston to get ahead of us in this, but this is something we've been talking about 2 years ago, if you all remember me bringing it up, was the idea of a bus stop accessibility app. And it was going to have all the bus stops listed in there. We haven't given up on that idea yet, but there were some concerns about who would get the calls for complaints and things. Kind of the things that Larry suggested we do. There's a lot of concerns about that. I don't know if a printed document is going to be the answer to that. Maybe a listing on a website, maybe an app. So I'm not dismissing your idea, but in terms of an immediate printed document listing every, all 11,000, et cetera, bus stops and who's responsible for it, let's look at how we can implement. I can't promise that. That's not a promise I can make tonight. That's going to come immediately.
maybe to improve access, that's all.
Yes. Boston has done a great job. If you look up what Boston's done, I'm really impressed. It was kind of getting the idea we want to try here. You can't do everything.
Which aspect of that, Christian?
Well, Boston has a new bus stop app that talks about the features of every bus stop in their system and tells you about the accessibility of the stop and things like that.
So that was actually created by everybody. just so I can clarify, it wasn't actually something that the MBTA came out with. It was actually something that was created by the Urban School for the Blind. So they have this app where you can look up a specific route or a specific stop, and that stop has, it's all about the last 100 feet toward a bus stop, knowing that GPS can lead you right to the bus stop. It gives you contextual clues that help you identify the remaining 100 feet to that actual physical bus stop. So that's what Christian Blake is talking about.
Thank you. I was just in Boston last weekend. I missed that. We'll get a very quick comment.
Yeah, just a quick comment. We have adopted street. Dr. Corner, can we adopt the bus stop? The jurisdictions don't let people come to cities, and what we'd like to do is ask the jurisdictions, the ones that are on their property, to ask people to adopt the bus stop. They get some publicity and maintain that and do all sorts of things.
I like that.
Do we get naming rights?
Well, what they do is say it's the name of the organization or the business that has adopted that bus stop, so they get some free advertising.
We can't give it to Pet Maine, the Fluffy Duck at bus stop or something. That'd be kind of fun. No, actually, though, cheers. I think that's an interesting notion. So, David, are you ready for our ombudsman report? Or Chris, are you doing?
No,
David
was
here.
Okay. Sorry. Two main categories of issues raised last month for me. One surrounded the late closing hours issues, and the other surrounded complaints and getting more information about them. Let me address the early closing hours. As you all know, there's going to be a public hearing that's going to go for something like 10 hours. And all that information from the website, I think somebody asked me whether we were only required to hold one public hearing, noting that with many service changes, we usually have three. The compact only requires one public hearing. What we are doing in compliance with Title VI public participation plan requirements is going through the community-based organizations, CBOs, in minority communities, in low-income communities, non-English speaking or English as a second language communities, and doing surveys. We're printing brochures and surveys in at least 8 languages. We are targeting rail stations in the areas that we know get the most late night service, sending people out that speak Spanish, Chinese, and Vietnamese as appropriate in those stations to do surveys of customers. So in addition to the legally required public hearing, we are doing the also legally required public participation process. And if you ever want to look at it, we have this massive document on our website that I believe is now accessible, which is called our public participation plan. And it goes into massive detail about our compliance with those requirements. I was also asked about the Title VI analysis that would be done for the service cuts, consideration of the service cuts. It will be looking at the difference in the effect on the targeted population. That is the population of minority and low-income population that uses the system in those hours. So it's going to be focused on how that those people's use of the system is reduced, and whether the impact of reduction will have a greater impact on minority groups or low-income groups in those hours than other groups that are not minority or not low-income. The process is that the Title VI analysis is prepared by staff using ridership data and survey results. It is presented to the board in conjunction with its decision. The Title VI process works such that if the Title VI report shows a disparate impact, statistical disparate impact on a protected group, the board must demonstrate that the choice is the only feasible alternative, that there is no other alternative that have a lesser impact. There's four alternatives under consideration, and of course these are all weighed against the no action alternative, which is to leave things the same. After the decision is made, the Title VI report is published. It will be on our website. If you look at prior service cut proposals, you'll find other Title VI analyses on our website, so you can get an idea of how those are done. Any questions on the closing hours process?
David?
Yes, sir.
It's limited to Title VI, and you answered my first question with a good one. You're going to be using the end, the big number of the people that actually use it after midnight.
Yes.
And then look at how many of those are minorities. The problem with that is, how do you get that number? If that number is going to include the after midnight riders, baseball games, football games, basketball games, major concerts, and things like that, or whether it's going to just include what the after hours riding is after midnight during a normal work week. Because during a normal work week, most of the service workers would fit the minority population, the low income population. But if you throw in 100,000 people that can afford to go to a Redskins game, that's going to really slant the number and increase the non-minority number, which will reduce the fraction that a minority has. So the question is, are they going to cherry pick in the appropriate way, which is not count the ridership from a Redskins game, Verizon Center, et cetera, or are they going to just put everything together, in which case you may sure change the normal riders that run from work?
Based on my knowledge, I worked with this these analyses a lot when I was in the general counsel's office. These use a statistical sampling over time, so that of course there will be a sampling of people who you know, would be on a night that we had a game or a concert, but there will also be samplings from all the other nights of people that just wrote because you know they were working late or on the bar night. So the sampling should statistically produce a representative result of the affected population.
Well, if they use an outlier statistic, that would eliminate the big gains when you suddenly have an extra 100,000 people riding from an extra. And so if they do the analysis that you're saying, which is great, and apply an outlier statistic to remove the nights that are totally atypical from the rest, then that, I think, would be a much fairer analysis.
I can't speak to
that. I know, but
I have seen that in the past we have used that kind of outlier process to eliminate aberrant findings on specific nights or periods of time due to weird things such as a winter storm, a change, you know, January statistics or something like that. So I know that outlier statistical methods are utilized in performing the analysis.
But I think it also depends on, you know, where the, you know, what are the questions they're trying to answer. You know, are we looking at disparate impact on certain communities, or are we looking at the overall impact of curtailing the late night service? I mean, I've heard numbers for regular late night service that seem to me to be spectacularly low, and that's an argument that Metro is using to continue the current practice of closing midnight. We know that although to some degree we know outliers, you know, in this town, you know, there seems like every weekend there's something going on that's pretty high volume. So I think, to me anyway, it's interesting, this is a general principle that kind of have multiple analyses to give us a complete picture of what the impact would be, both in terms of the, as you say, the regular ridership and disparate impact, as well as for outlier situations.
Right.
Yeah, that's just my confusing about it. But Jill, do you have anything else for?
Yeah, the other issue were the complaints and the ideas about improving accessibility of the complaint process. You asked me to look into some sort of enhanced way of leaving feedback or getting information. I talked to our director of customer service. At the moment, when our customer representatives leave at night, the job is taken over by the people that tell you, you know, how to schedule your trip, the 7,000 number. They do take complaint information and pass it on to the customer service team for their next work day. So there is coverage until 8:30 at night for that on weekends. As far as getting IVR type process, they are looking at that. IVR, interactive voice response, IVR, is kind of expensive, but they are looking at putting it in the FY18 budget. If you guys are interested in that, they would appreciate your support on that issue when those budget issues come around. I think it would be a good way to get the information. The problem with doing it any other way, such as simply having a voicemail box for people to leave information in, is that it's going to produce a garbage in, garbage out situation for me. As it is, I don't get all the information I need from a lot of these complaints to follow up with them. If people just leave a voicemail with their ideas that occur to them, the questions that occur to them to answer, and don't have an interactive process with the customer representative, then they're going to need to be called back. And the customer representative people are going to be playing phone tag with people and trying to catch up with them to get further information. And it's just not going to be a good process. I think that the best thing we can do right now is to, you know, focus on getting an IVR type system for the future. And also working on getting information from existing data. Moving to that, you'd asked me about survey information. We do have survey information on Metro Access customers' usage of bus and rail. We have some ideas about why they don't use it or use it. We also have some data on people with reduced fares and seniors. I've asked our head of research, Jason Mentzer, to gather that information for me, and he's going to produce an analysis of how people with disabilities are using or having problems with the system based upon the existing data for us. Once we see that, we'll be able to know whether we need to ask some additional questions or different questions, or go about it in different ways. So at the moment, the final step is the work in progress. But I'll report on it next month, too.
Terrific. Thank you. And as I noted last month, I think as a committee, we need to be thinking about if we can build up a survey instrument like you're describing, like we were talking about last month. What is it that we want to ask? What do we want to be able to gather in the way of information that might be of use to us here as a committee and to the community at large? Thank you very much, David, for your report. Any questions for Mr. Schaefer before we move on to the next item?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Reed.
I just want to announce, as David was talking about the public hearing, it's on the restriction of Metro Rail operators. It's going to be Thursday, October the 20th, here at Metro's headquarters. The open house is from 12 noon to 9 p.m. The public hearing starts at 12:30 in the afternoon, and that goes to 10 p.m.
Okay, Wow, I thought that was a mystery when I first saw that.
Yes.
That is a marathon session. Are they taking breaks, do you know, or?
It doesn't tell me that's what they're doing. If anyone needs any accommodations for the public hearing, you are to contact 202-962-2511 for, to request an accommodation. The TTY number is 202-962-2033 for that. And that's actually for the public hearing that is in person. And then the other additional ways that Mr. Schaefer discussed are there. I'll also send this reminder back out to the committee again, but those are the hours and the dates.
Will they be running bus and rail at a normal schedule during the hearing, or if you come at 10 o'clock, you have to take 2 hours to get home?
It doesn't address that as an issue, whether or not bus service or the rail will be open during that time or not open during that time, but it is about metro restrictions of service hours.
Thank you, Dr. B. Charlie, you have a question, sir?
Yeah. Is there a person and an address to write to if we want to introduce written testimony because we're going to be out of state?
Yeah. Chris, do you start that?
For those individuals that want to put in a written statement for your public hearing, and I'll send this in the email as well. It goes to the Office of the Secretary here at WMATA, 600 Fifth Street Northwest, 2001. Written statements must be received by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, October 25th.
Thank you.
If anyone prefers to email that information in, it goes to writtentestimony@WMATA.com, and that's all one word.
Will we have time to have the AAC take an opinion and submit one before they make a decision, since our next meeting is until November?
Well, if the AAC would like to take a position on it, they certainly can, and we can forward it to the appropriate office.
Thank you. Mr. Rank already has taken a position.
Was there any discussion of that at last week's meeting, the full AAC meeting?
I think the committee had some discussion on it, but there was nothing definitive, and then there was also nothing that I seen via email that the committee talked about. So if the committee wants to take a position, clearly they can.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. B. Do we have any committee members that joined us a little bit later and want to introduce themselves, or is it still the same complement of folks?
Steve Kavanagh, Washington, D.C., Department of Service. I walked in about 70 minutes late.
No problem. I just wanted to do
my excuse for that. Sure.
I don't know if I have a bar to have up here. Yeah, I have to stay in for 7 minutes. Okay, so thank you so much, Mr. Schaefer, for your report. I appreciate that. You said that our bus is outside. What is our logistical plan here?
Our next piece is going to be a demonstration. We've been talking about the announcements on the bus system and how those announcements at times can be extremely loud, causing challenges to the public. And so this piece here is a follow-up to that. I think this was a meeting before, so it wasn't our last meeting, but it was, I believe,
July.
Yes, the meeting in July. We had a discussion about it, and that meeting just didn't allow for the demonstration. So this piece is the demonstration. The bus is outside, and we are willing to help and escort members there. So if everyone would pause for us to go outside, that would be great.
Okay.
For people on speaker, will announce when we get back.
Yes.
That's all I got to look for. I'm going to go on speaker.
Well,
what happens is, so they don't know, they turn it off.
Is that on microphone?
No.
Now, yeah, now, I just have to tell you my own personal opinion. I'm not sure what the engineers were doing out there or if things have changed. Just in my humble personal opinion, that wasn't very loud. That's just my humble personal opinion. That's not to influence your dialogue, but I just wanted to share with you. I have experienced this system much louder back in Baltimore, and there were adjustments that were made. Maybe they were much louder before, but I cannot believe this is what the level of noise that people are complaining about. So maybe they've already made the adjustment, but I just wanted to share that with you as my own personal experience.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. Anyone else want to speak to the issue?
I want to.
Okay, so I heard Charlie, and I heard, is that Darnese?
That's Darnese, me.
And then Bill. Okay, Charlie, want to start us off?
Thank you. Is it working all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I analogize this to the automatic pedestrian safety signals that are audible, and they have a locator tone, and that tone by the uniform and manual of traffic control devices has to be audible between 6 and 12 feet from the actual signal where you push the button. And those of you that have gone out to those areas and heard that audible tone, then that's good because it's working. But oftentimes it's so low that the person trying to find the thing spends more time trying to find the box than they do waiting for the cycle to happen. So that's indicative of what the problem can be. That if it's too low, then it doesn't do any good for anybody. If it's too high, then you get mad. And the problem is where it's in the middle. And that's the question we have with today's demonstration. From my perspective, what I heard out there, two compliments. One is they use the ambient noise, and that is important because if it does get softer outside, you don't need a loud voice. If it does get louder outside, you need a higher voice. And bottom line to me, I listened to that, and it sounded pretty good to me, so I'm happy with that.
Thank you, Charlie.
My question was for clarification. Is the ambient voice automatically toned up or down when the door to the bus is open, or was the engineer just manually overriding that today?
I think we have the yell back in the room.
The ambient noise microphone is automatic. It's constantly reading the ambient noise until we make an announcement, and it switches from sensing to making the announcement. As soon as the announcement is over, we go back to sensing the ambient noise again. So it is not tied to the door opening or closing.
I have one other thing. What Charlie said about the audible tone, is there a way to add the audible tone, you know, like a piercing type tone to the voice, so that a person that's hard of hearing may be able to hear the pitch of the tone rather than, you know, the words. They would still know the direction where the bus was, even though they couldn't read it or hear it. But.
Yes, we certainly could add a tone to the exterior announcement, a precursor to the announcement.
But you're not talking about just a tone that says bing, this is the response. You're talking about something that actually gives more content information just by the tone itself.
So actually, I'm just talking about the tone, but they would let the people that are hard of hearing, you know, they would have PR or whatever so that people wouldn't know what their tone meant. Because I don't think there's enough space to have the tone and the voice message. But I don't know. It's just a suggestion. Please
include it. thank you, Darnese. My apologies, interpreter. There's been some talking, simultaneous talking about myself, so my apologies. Thank you, Darnese. Phil?
Yeah, I think the
problem is trying to get a system that fits all situations. I happen to live on the fourth floor overlooking a bus stop out one window, a metro station with very noisy escalators out the other window, and a traffic light that has a verbal announcement out the other window. So I can hear all three. Depending upon whether it's rush hour or not, and whether there's a crowd. I ride buses at Farragut Square and DuPont Circle, which have incredibly loud ambient noise and incredibly loud people around me talking at the same time. I ride in less populated areas in Arlington, where it's quiet, peaceful, and we can hear everything that goes on. And I think the question is, there's no way that you can have one fits all. Just think about the announcements on the rail. The rush hour announcements are worthless. I don't care how good they are, if you're in the car or on the platform, there's just too many people talking at the same time. Now, Bernice's comment about the tone is a very good one. It's one I tried to get them to put onto the rail. It's like in the Navy when you're on a ship. There's a the announcement's coming. When I was out there, I think when we were all out there, everybody was talking to everybody else. You missed the beginning of the announcement because you didn't know it started yet. And had there been a tone, people might have quieted down at the DuPont Circle, Farragut Square, mall, metro stops. So I think having a pre-announcement tone is a really good thing because it will get people's attention. The other thing is someone who's a little bit hard of hearing and doesn't see very well, I always ask the driver before I get on the bus. I know where I'm going, the door opens, I say, do you stop at? And they're very good, they say yes or no. And that's very true. So we have to be aware that the announcements are great, and the enunciator is great, and they work some of the time, not all the time, for no fault of anybody other than life. And then the drivers have to be able to answer questions. And so far, my experience has been 90% of the drivers are great. They've answered my questions. They told people to get out of the accessible seats and let me sit down. So I also think sounds very good. I can hear them once I pay attention.
Thank you so much, Bill. Steve and then Larry.
My feeling is that when you make a change, there needs to be a good reason for it. And if there are competing reasons why not, the benefit versus the cost should be considered. And that doesn't mean that it's not possible to take corrective or canceling action. When I see this announcement as pertaining to a very small percentage of the riders, not the people with metro cards, not the tourists who know what the fare is, but generally, people riding for the first or second time who don't know the fares. It's a small percentage.
Okay, thank you.
Half the time it's not needed because the doors are opening in the front for people to leave the bus, but there are no people right. The people in the front car hear this. Whether it's day or night, it's loud enough when the door is open for the announcement to radiate to people who have no alternative to move to the back, who are sitting there. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I've seen some people start to wear earplugs in the front. And I was given, I wouldn't because of my position, I was actually given a pair of earplugs. Not that I said anything, but the woman who happened to be a senior next to me pulled out hers when the noise got a little too annoying because every 30 seconds it comes. So that's my point. My point is to reconsider perhaps why. And if it's a done deal and there's no reconsideration, then let's reconsider the announcement itself. Base fare is confused because people associated with the rails base fare. On this bus is not necessary. So Phil, maybe if we could cut down the answer. I live at DuPont Circle.
I know these very well. I'm sorry, Steve, we do need to move on, Mayor. We have three other topics that we need to cover. But thank you very much. I appreciate that. Larry.
Christian, what are your comments?
No. Oh. I guess, sure, we also have a couple of public comments.
Yes, exactly. So I need to move things along. Thank you for your understanding, Steve. Larry. Thank you, Chris.
First of all, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Second, my question, it's probably, I see it as more of a service enhancement, and it's the concept of making a looping announcement. Sometimes at a bus stop where many people are getting on, you know, a bus pulls up, doors open, a lot of stuff is going on, people talking, and the announcement is being made, or maybe someone is just approaching the bus stop where there's a lot of people in and may miss that announcement. There are transit agencies that have looping announcements where after the door opens, it'll say Route 32's destination Foggy Bottom. Maybe after a minute and a half or a minute or so, it will loop the announcement so you know this is the Route 32 going to Foggy Bottom. Not saying that you should do it, but I'm saying that there have been agencies that have had it, and I know for me that's been a godsend. Especially when you've approached a bus, you don't necessarily know what bus it is. So.
Thank you, Larry. We had a couple of quick public comments. Is that correct, Chris?
Oh, I think they changed their mind. So then I'll just ask one other question.
Yes,
to my colleagues. This goes back to the concept of base fare, because I did hear that out there. So we've kind of addressed the issue of why we have the fare to begin with, and that's something our drivers have experienced some challenges with. And I'm like you, Phil, today I rode the F-12 for the first time in my life. But the first thing I did is even I had a trip planner, I had all the information, the first thing I did when I got on the bus, are you going to 4912 Garden City Drive, and she said yes, she was kind about it. But we understand that there have been some challenges. We cannot ignore that. My colleagues out there on the bus are frontline employees. So the fare information is probably, I have to say, but in terms of base fare, I know at MTA we had 50 cents for an express bus. You pay an extra surcharge for express buses. But for the vast majority of our buses, just being short of the message, is that a possibility to take away from this meeting?
So if I could, this is Phil Watts again. I want to thank you all for allowing me to come before you again, and we'll keep coming until we get it right. Right? We will take this back to our planning group. This is a base fare thing. We know why we introduced it. Operator assaults are connected to fare disputes, which are connected to why we introduced this. We'll take a look at maybe modifying or even if it really is showing a positive effect. We will take that back. We commit to get back to you on that. We'll also commit to get back with the pinion concept. I know Mr. Collins and Clark have taken notes while that was brought up. We'll take a look at that being introduced prior to announcement to see and bring back to you and see if that is what we want to try to do. As it relates to the overall volume, can we get a consensus tonight? Does anybody have a real concern with what you heard tonight? The normal volume was day hours, and the reason we cut back at night is to try to split the baby, so to speak. We get a lot of complaints after hours with residents. I think the gentleman said earlier, you I don't know how you get any sleep at all. I mean, quite frankly. But that's the whole concept of reducing it at nighttime when the ambient noises are less, to try to lessen the disruption to the residents.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone who has anything to add about the volume? Again, that was our primary reason for having those.
One sentence about the volume.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's okay.
well, mine is about, I think the tone is fine, I mean, as an audible tone should be added to it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to suggest it. The other thing is to say in your base fare is, how about, your fare is, well, fight before your fare.
And we're looking both of those, are you going to?
Something like that.
Thank you, Darius and Steve.
At the same time you're considering, you know, these comments, could you also consider them for the announcement that was currently added to the bus for the rear doors? Doors opening, doors closing.
We'll entertain that again, but again, I think I briefed that at the last meeting, that's a safety item.
Audio.
That's not part of the clutter system, that's tied into the door system. You know, knocking on wood, we don't have a lot of rear door incidents in Vermont, but I think the reason is because we have every bell and whistle on demand on every door. It's pretty prevalent in the transit industry, believe it or not, yeah. People falling out and up trying to get in the bus from the rear doors. It's pretty prevalent.
Thank you. Larry, you were next.
I just want to confirm when they were setting the ambient noise adjuster to show us what it sounds like after hours. The first time that door opened, the announcement was really low. I just want to be clear that that's not something that no one would ever hear the announcement that low. There was the very first time you opened the door when you adjusted the ambient noise for what happens after rush hour. It was really low. No one else could hear it. But
well, yes, Mr. Collins will speak to that.
When I first did the nighttime announcement, the engine had cut off because it automatically stops after 15 minutes if the bus is not in service. That engine noise has a big effect on the volume in the at the front door. So then I started the engine as the bus normally would be out in revenue service, and that's what you would have heard subsequently. So at the very beginning, the engine was off, and that was at the absolute lowest, I think, that the announcement would be.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Darnese, you had a very quick question, please.
I just wanted to thank all of you because on behalf of persons with disabilities, and Breanne is not here. I need to remind you that the nation's capital has over 20% persons with disabilities and has the largest number of deaf and hard of hearing people in residence in the metropolitan area. So we thank you.
Thank you, Darnese. With that, I think I'll bring this conversation to a close. I just want to add, for me anyway, in terms of the volume, I found the audible announcements to be quite clear and understand the need for and the variation for the times of day. I think it's important to maintain good community relations, just as we also ensure accessibility. So I think it's Bill noted earlier, it's tricky to get the right balance, but I think we're getting a little bit closer with this, and I appreciate you all coming out to demo the bus, and Mr. Collins for your engineering work, and thank you so much.
Mr. Chair, this is B.
Yes, sir.
The committee wants to take a strong stand or position on the issue. This is the second time the committee has heard this issue, so is there a recommendation or anything we have that we want to take a stand on, or we just leave it as stated?
Okay, Charlie, you want to make a motion?
The following motion is made by Charles Crawford. I move that the volume remain as it was today.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Is there a second? And then we can have discussion.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to the bus rail committee recommend that the volume be maintained at the level that was demonstrated today for the day and nighttime volumes. Phil.
I would like to add to that the group, whatever they're called, communication group, I guess, investigate the suggestions that were made by the committee to add to the current volume. and those included the audible tone before the announcement start, and possibly modifying the fair announcement, just say fair rather than base fair.
Okay, any discussion on the next? Charlie, are you okay with that? Okay, great. Darnese, did you have something? Was that, sounded like you were going to talk to you, that issue. Yep, okay. Okay, so we have a motion that the subcommittee recommended that the volumes be kept as they were demoed, and that the engineering group explore the option of adding audible tones and to modify the fair message. Okay, all those, I think I summarized it. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Thank you. We have opposition and abstentions. Motion carried. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Stanley.
Brian, can I mention something to you?
Thank you, Charlie.
Mr. Collins, before you leave, I'm delighted to hear that the bus automatically turns off after 50 minutes of non-activity, because that is something that we have tried to get done for the 10 years I've been on the committee, for not only pollution and economy, but for the vision impaired people that move by tapping their canes. And when the bus is running at the bus phase, it really interferes with being able to hear where you're going. So the fact, I'm just so happy that you told us that that's finally happened.
Very good.
And whoever implemented that, thank them.
Amen, Phil. That's one of those cane tappers. We have a bunch of buses out there. They would. Thank you. You can hear something sometimes on the buses come right away. Dr. P, do we have there was an agenda item on communicating with Devin Hart here. Is it tentative?
No, we actually addressed that last week. Brad was here dealing with the whiteboards.
Yes.
And the solutions. So that was fully vetted last week.
Excellent. Okay. So that is moving from the tentative column to the address column. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And next we have the
I almost have to say we're not a committee of individual special interests. I try to not make that, but there are, as we've now noticed, there are more interests than others in certain things. And one of our favorite members, George Ray, isn't here tonight. But we're still going to follow up with this, and this is not the end all be all of this. You always hear me reference MTA, and I have to stop doing that, but I haven't been here yet as long as I was at MTA, so I always have to just go back to my own experience. And I'm learning things new each and every day I'm here, the more you get out of the system. Some of you probably already are aware of this, some of you may not be, but you know on our platform edges and our metro rail stations, there are platform edge lights that flash. Well, they're supposed to be lit when the train is in the air, we know that. They flash as the train is coming, flash throughout the dwelling, and then flash as the train is leaving. At most stations, those lights are red. But did you know that at some stations, those lights are white? Well, you know the thing. I didn't know that until one day we had a meeting, and I went to a new station, and I'm thinking, there's something wrong here. Somebody bought the wrong bus. I'm, making all this noise. And so I was corrected about that those were actually the way they used to be. Then they changed them to red. Well, this subject tonight is about the fact that we may want to go back to all white throughout the system. And part of that is a maintenance issue because it's harder to find quality LED lighting in red that fit this specific system and these particular light bulbs. And if we need more super technical details, we can agendize this. But we wanted to just first put it out there, let you know what we're thinking, and find out from this committee, is there any immediate strong objection to the notion that Metro may change all of the platform edge lights back to white as they used to be, and as they still are in some stations, but are not red now in the overwhelming majority of stations. Well, what are your thoughts?
A little bit of history.
Yes, sir.
10 years ago, the question was risen about red versus white because police cars and emergency vehicles found out that that light spectrum was not as visible as the white spectrum. So you notice the old blow machines on police cars aren't red anymore. They changed the color. We did an investigation with the NIH and found out on those bulbs they were equivalent as far as red or white. And so for economic purposes and ease of replacement, since there is no band difference for visualizing red or white, going back to white should not be a problem. So I would go for the economy. That would give us sufficient money to get some more visual access vehicles and then go on those and then also vote.
Yeah, Steve, go ahead.
I agree with Phil.
All right. And there we go. Thank you, Steve.
Actually, I find the white more visible, even though perhaps on a test basis it's the same. So I think that's positive.
That's the same to me. That's the same to me, Charlie. Always have a dog. It's a good boy.
That's a dog. Well, dogs have even fewer color cones in their eyes than humans. So two, I think they have two instead of three. So.
You, Mr. Chair, both chairs.
Yes, yeah, welcome, Patrick. I agree with Phil. I mean, if there's no advantage one way or the other in terms of detectability from a visual perspective, then go with the economy.
And Doris has always said that the contrast with the white blinking lights is better than with the red.
No.
Color contrast is better with the white than with the red.
Yeah.
So I would, for all of those reasons, I would go with the white.
So it sounds that what I will do, we're not just going to run and do it. What we can do though is I'll let my colleagues know that there sounds like there's strong support from the committee, or at least there's no opposition to the idea. But we'll bring it back one last time officially at your November AAC meeting and ask you all as a whole committee to just express your support or opposition. But if it sounds like support, we really appreciate that.
Do we need a recommendation from this committee to move the white?
Oh, sure. That would be helpful. Yeah, that would make it more efficient.
I'll make a recommendation that we support, support the white and move to white those colors, the colors which are not white.
Okay. Was that a second?
Yeah.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the committee recommending to Metro that they move forward with replacing the red lights and white lights on the Metro platform, so I'm saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Sessions. Motion carries. It's a big motion day.
Thank you very much for the minutes, though, that the motion passed and put the reasons we said that we wanted that, which is economy and no difference in visibility and background is better for white than red. And I put those three things in with the motion.
The Phil said that we want to make sure that the motion reflects that. That it's better contrast with the white lights than the red. And That's the most important thing from this committee's perspective. We're pro economies. For the reasons that Phil mentioned, which we can then use that money for other accessibility ventures. Thank you, Chris. I actually had a good question. Is this going to be a process of attrition as the red lights blink out when they replace them, or are they actually going to go in actively?
This is going to be a combination of both. As platforms are improved, the platform replacements take place, they would replace the light bulbs then. As we are finding some of these challenges with the power, we're going in, and as we fix the power issues, they can replace the light bulbs at the same time.
Thank you. Okay, we have one last agenda item, that is the subcommittee leadership. And that's Dr. Green, do you have?
Yes,
get VRS appointments. We've been discussing that for the last couple of years.
We have been punting it for a while.
We have, and so we would like members to either nominate themselves or nominate a colleague for this position. It is for the vice chair and second vice chair of the bus rail subcommittee meeting. Charlie, is that you? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so moved, Charlie.
Phil, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, in the tradition that I have developed of always nominating people that aren't here, I'd like to nominate Brianne for one of the vice chair positions, since she is incredibly active on communications for the rail and for the bus system. And she's not here, I think, is the perfect time to nominate her.
Okay.
And Dr. B, just as a point of clarification, are we going to entertain some nominations and then have a full vote at the AEC in November?
We would like to do just that as quickly as possible. And so we'd like members again to either step up and nominate themselves or have someone to nominate to fill in this position. And again, you'll be serving as the vice chair or second vice chair position when our esteemed chair is not available to run the meetings or attend various events. You should know that most of the time the events that the leadership are notified about first are always open to members eventually to participate. So, you know, it's also part of the AEC's desire to train leaders to move up to the next level as terms expire. We'll still need folks to step up. So we have Brianne. We'll definitely contact her and let her know that she has been nominated. And again, she has to accept to be interested, but we need some other members to step up.
I have a nomination.
Yes, sir.
I nominate myself.
Very good. We have Charlie Crawford and Brianne Ferguson.
And also, Brian, if I can ask if you are willing to continue on as you're going, I'd nominate you. If you're not willing to continue on, I'll nominate somebody else.
In the chair position? Or?
Yeah.
I think we're just entertaining vice and second vice at this time.
Well, no, it should be all three positions according to the bylaws.
Phil, that's not quite correct. The bylaws don't actually lend to what the vice chairs, the bylaws lend to what the AAC does in their vote. If the vice chairs want to remain, they can and are appointed by the chair. So if there is no change in that option, I would like to remain, and that's the way the process works.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Can I nominate myself as second vice chair?
You sure can. So we have Charlie Crawford. Charlie, did you have a first or second vice chair you wanted? You didn't?
Do I have a preference?
Yes, do you have a preference?
That was my king. I'll take second.
You want second king?
I'm humble, yes.
You want second king? Okay, we have second king. Okay. We will add that information. Thank you all so much. And then we will move this forward to a full committee and so forth for a vote.
Again, historically, when we set this up as having two vice chairs, it was that one would handle bus, one would handle rail. It wasn't that one was more important than the other, so we don't have a crown prince and a crown princess.
Well, very good. We'll follow back around with those. Mr. Chair, if I might, can give some just basic announcements?
Please.
Okay. I wanted to remind members that the Richard Hettinger Award nomination period is open. It will be open until October 31st. We do have applications and things right on the table immediately outside the door, so please make sure that you all find us a worthy candidate for that. We did earlier the public hearings, but I'll mention it again. The public hearings for Metrorail operating hours will be Thursday, October 20th. It's here at Metro's headquarters. The open house is from 12 noon to 9 p.m. with the public hearing being at 12:30 in the afternoon to 10 p.m. I also wanted to remind members that Saturday, October 15th, is data day, and that is from 10 a.m. to 5:30, and it will be here in this building, and I believe in this room. And finally, data day.
Well, we can talk about it a little bit, just to help.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Data day is Saturday, October 15th, from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and this is the event description. It says Metro has some great data feeds and app developers from Google and Apple to Metro are consuming them to provide great tools for transit riders in the Washington, D.C. region. The great news, yet there are opportunities to do even more, and they're wanting individuals to come in and talk about app services.
Can I have a more to
them? Oh, please.
Yeah, okay, just to save some time, we're running out of time. So what happens is, Metro gathers through the delivery of public transportation a lot of data, and the ability to use that data to create apps is open, and it has been for a while. Metro's own staff can create all the apps of your next bus, your next rail, bus stops, as we talked about earlier, or we could partner with people who do that for a living. Metro's job is to produce world-class, safe public transportation. If there are people out there in the world who made their careers to build apps to feed information to consumers, why not partner with them to get that information out to you? The point in why the AAC and other stakeholders open to the public from the disability community are being invited and we want you to attend is really precisely the same reason we want you to come to the pre-proposal conference on Friday. We want the developers to know what it is you need as people with disabilities, not just looking at customers in the generic, but what is it that we all need and what would you recommend to them as they're building these apps to incorporate into their apps to make sure that you use it so that they can make their money at it, because let's face it, this is not all just nonprofits here. They're selling ads and whatever else. But if they want to make money by having eyeballs and ears on their apps, well, what is it that you need? What is it that you need in order to be able to fully utilize and be on their apps? So we want people to come there and share with these developers, open their minds and open their brains and their thoughts so that they can be creative in what they do so that you would want to use their products. So that's Saturday morning.
Right, that's Saturday, October 15th from 10 a.m. to 5:30. And then the last piece was what Mr. Blake just mentioned. We sent an email out earlier today and it was included in that information, but the Abilities Ride pre-proposal conference is Friday, October 14th from 10 a.m. to 12 noon here in this building, in this room, and this meeting is open to the public.
Can I just say a little thing about that? I'm probably going to talk more next week if I'm in town. I may have to be on travel. But, so just, oh, no, I can't talk next week. I'm talking about next week. So, yeah, let me say this, and then we have to just get this out. 2 minutes? Oh, you cut me off 2 minutes. Wow, okay. Oh, yes, I get you. I'm sorry. I'm coming back to me. See, I work for her. Let me just say this. We're still trying to figure out the kind of setup with it, but the way I'm envisioning this again is there are going to be different companies in the room. I'm hoping the lot show up, I don't know. But there are going to be different companies in the room with their ideas. They've seen the RFP. I think we've been very clear about the RFP and what will make their efforts successful. But I think what we're going to have to try to do is figure out a way to have a public comment period where it's not going to be necessarily you asking specific questions of the potential bidders. I don't think it's going to work that way. But we want to have an opportunity where you say what it is you need in order to use their services. Because again, These aren't nonprofits, mom and pops coming in. These are people who want to make money. It's business. Let's take it at that. But if they want your business, which is your patron of their business and their services, they're going to have to come to the table with certain things. And I can put it in the RFP all I want, and there'll be other people who evaluate the proposals, not me. But I think it's going to be very good for them to hear from the customers that they want to serve and help them understand what it is you need. Otherwise, you're just going to keep riding on your access and they won't have that extra business they want. So I would like for all of you to show up, but don't come there, you know, expecting to interview these potential vendors. But we do want to give you an opportunity. We'll figure out how that's going to work so that you can share your thoughts and feelings and needs with those potential vendors.
Thank you, Chris.
Brian?
Yeah, Phil.
Before we adjourn, I have one question and suggestion for the work plan. I had a very busy time on the bus this weekend with baby carriages and walkers. And one of the things that I think we might want to look at, seeing eye dogs sit under the seats, get out of the way, all walkers can be folded up and taken out of the walking path. And most people don't bother to do that. And getting by a baby carriage and a walker on and off the bus is next to impossible for an older senior citizen on crutches. And so on our work plan, I think we might want to take a look at what can be done, signs or requests or announcements to clear the aisles. I know on the trains they say everybody please move to the center of the car as opposed to move away from the doors, but on the buses that's a real problem. This is a narrow aisle. And there's walkers.
This is
the
work plan aisle.
Yes.
Actually, are we able to capture that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Patrick, please.
Yeah, just one more thing. I think for the agenda meeting you mentioned, we have a public hearing coming up on the 20th. Mm-hmm. Do we have a position from Bus Rail on what we should do regarding rail and the rail service hours? What are we going to talk about when we go to the hearing? What's the committee's position on the proposals that have been out there?
I asked that question earlier, and Mr. Blake said that if we can reach a position, that we would pass it on to the board. So I think we can have timing on what the hearing actually is. Because when they have the hearing, they're still going to have to analyze all the data from the online stuff, and the written comments, and the Title VI. So as long as we have until the first AAC meeting in November, we can pass a motion and pass that one. I think we're still in good time, rather than having to get to dinner tonight in the last few minutes.
Yeah, we have.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Written testimony, or written statements, I should say, are received by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, October 25th. So that's the deadline for to submit written statements in regards to the public hearing.
But that's for individuals. This would be a recommendation from the AAC, which is...
It would be in our board report, the chair's report, right? Is everything in the
Exactly. I'm planning on doing my written comment and sending it in time, but for the committee, we are sending that in as a board report. And all I'm saying is, before the board actually makes a decision, they've got a lot of data analyzed, and if we get that in the first of November, that's still before the decision is made.
Okay. Well, we do meet again on the 17th next Monday, so.
All right. One last public comment. I know we're running out of time. Mr. Yesville, one last public comment.
I forgot to mention this. I knew there was something else. It has to do with the elevator signs in the rail system. We were yelling and screaming about this when I left the AAC in 2015. They used to be on the signs. When you got out of your train across there, it said Van Ness, and it had an elevator symbol and an arrow that pointed which direction. They abolished all of that. Now it's in one place, overhead. You've got to find it. And I'm getting lost. And it doesn't help people. What you did with doesn't help people find their way. And I know this.
And I will say, we've listened to you on that. That was probably, Phil made that point as well. That was probably not one of our better decisions. But starting with Gallery Place, we did create a new pilot, which is adding these the International Symbol of Accessibility on every sign, and we're doing that throughout the stations. So it's
with arrows,
with arrows to which way is the elevator, yes, ma'am. So on that, we're about
out
of time.
We are out of time, but thank you. I appreciate bringing that out. Some days are lovely, right, gentlemen? I don't know.
We adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. Do we have a second? Any discussion? All those in favor of adjourning? Aye. Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Mr. Chiefs.
If anyone wants to see a sample of the wrong way, I'm challenging you.